You're listening to Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast that explores the world of K-12 education as it intersects with the Christian faith. You might call us extreme moderates. We're skeptics who try not to be cynics and are allergic to cheap rhetoric. Welcome to the show.
Summer School, episode number 2.
Here we are.
Yeah, nice short and sweet episodes for your summer. Bit of professional development, faith and learning conversation.
Easy listening.
Yeah, well, we try. You know what I
mean? Yeah. Still working on that iced tea.
Yeah, we haven't actually left since the last episode.
The ice
to be fully honest. And the ice hasn't melted yet. It's actually a pretty cold day today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Pacific Northwest rainforest vibes. Yeah. Well, we ended our last episode talking a little bit about how you felt very encouraged by the conversation that you had with our chapel leadership team for next year. And that's very cool. And you said that the reason you were so excited about that was because they were asking a lot of the right questions, I think is what you said. So maybe do you want to unpack, like, in your opinion, what are the right questions to be asking? Well, I think you actually talked about, they said, what are we doing and why are we doing this? I think maybe one of the best examples I could give, if when I was in chapel in high school, it'd be like, why are we singing this song? And frequently we would say, well, because it is new. You know what I mean? And I think what you're recognizing is students on this leadership team do want to go deeper than that.
They
so
really
how
do.
About you want to, how about you unpack what that deepness is?
I think some of the depth that they are, that they're tracking with.
Yeah, did I say deepness? I don't think that's a word. Depth.
Depth.
Sorry, continue.
Deep. it is June and it's summertime.
Yeah.
The depth that the students sort of brought to that table, again, it sort of, it just jolted me to realize that they're thinking at this level, was around, and I'll sort of summarize their thinking, around what we're giving airtime to. They wouldn't use that language, but basically, what are we privileging in terms of the use of space? That one blew me away. This one girl, I actually forget her name, new on the team, was talking about the way we use lighting and spatially are aware of what we're doing in a space has connotations. It has implications for how we encounter what is happening on the stage, even if it is a stage. So they're talking at sort of that big meta level around, it's not just about making sure the lights are on or they're at a certain dimness, what have you. So that was like whoa, kind of meta. More of the practical things that they were talking about was about the grid or the, what are the criteria for us deciding who gets the microphone? Who gets to share? Who gets to speak? There was some banter and discussion around the pros and cons of having a theme. Like for example, preaching a series. So having multiple voices or having multiple weeks and chapels of focusing on the same thing versus sort of one-offs. And they were very attuned. Like I didn't have to feed this too much. They were noticing things like, well, if we focus on one thing, we're missing the larger picture. Or you have somebody who parachutes in and does a one-off.
Yes.
And then they go, and there's, even in our own attempt for continuity, that can be lost. And all these things, this is spoken, of course, at the planning stage level. This is our chapel leadership team. So it's really around that table that some of those decisions get made.
So that is an interesting question about who gets the microphone. Mm-hmm. And so frequently it is a youth pastor X from church Y. And I like the word that you used, to parachute in to some extent. And I think... I do agree that when you do something like that, there is a degree of relevancy to that speaker, and they bring whatever sort of relevant youth conversation that's going on at their local church is could be relevant to maybe some of the things that's going on. But as I read more and more authors, specifically I think about people like Rachel Held Evans, that relevancy may not actually be as much as what we're looking for in a chapel situation. You've used the word currency before, mm-hmm. and I think that there is a difference there, that when you have someone that comes up and it's like, oh, this guy is, or, well, I even use the guy, you know what I mean? Frequently there are men that are speaking as well, that this person is so relevant. But if that person has no currency with these students, the relevancy is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's no longer relevant. So I recognize that finding currency with who you give the mic to, like, do you have some connection with my students? Like, that's why I find it so powerful when teachers will then take the mic in chapel and share from who they are and from their own
that's
experience
very rich.
With Christ.
And the students themselves mentioned that they value that. That's something that they're looking for and they want to hear from. It's also interesting to note that in certain contexts, they do want outside voices. They don't want, like, some things they don't want to be in house. They would prefer, but by and large they want that relational connection.
So in addition to that, we had a conversation about chapel, and you have an interesting vision walking into things like chapel leadership, which is really cool, because you said something along the lines, and you can correct me you can unpack this quotation, you can correct me where I maybe speak wrong, but that you're actually uninterested in walking in and attempting to recreate for these students what worked for you, which is so interesting, because sometimes when we approach pedagogy, we say, you know what, I learned so well this way, or I learned so well this way, I'm going to recreate that pedagogy in this situation, where you kind of come at it as from a perspective from, well, for these students and in their context and culture, mm-hmm. recreating what worked for me isn't necessarily going to do that. So you don't want to come in and recreate what worked for you in a chapel or whatever spiritual environment. You want to find what's going to be in their context, the impact for them. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this gets to the nature of contextualization. I mean, that's what we're talking about. The other framing of this, or the other word that I often will use, is I don't want to rely on, and I need to check myself against falling into the habits of nostalgia. So a longing for me to, when you mention recreate, I want to relive or recreate certain elements of that was a spiritual environment that I was formed in, and I can just repackage that, and it's going to work. 20, 25 years later. There is an element of continuity, though. I mean, there is an element of, okay, what was it? It's sort of like those criteria questions. What was it that worked or that I found so impactful when I was in sort of youth ministry and in high school, 15 years ago or more? and how can it not just recreate, but perhaps translate? And so that same level of, this is a word I use with our chapel leadership team, it for the space, our spiritual spaces, chapel, Bible class, any class, to be conducive. Conducive to an openness to the work of the Spirit. This is another element that I was talking to students about. We need to be very careful that we are not relying solely on us manufacturing, right? That's a fine line between making a conducive space that allows for God to work versus we can manufacture this. Mm-hmm. And if we just, if the music is just so, if the speaker uses just the right rhetoric,
if the keyboard player comes up at this time,
at the right time, all of those things, you can manufacture a lot of sentiment, and emotion, emotivism. And we've had this conversation before. I mean, music is a massive conduit for spiritual formation and development. So I think it was actually in that context we were talking about music. We were actually sitting, across the table from
our band director and worship leader
team team leader.
Leader
and
person.
Guy person. And wonderful guy. Love him.
Yes.
And it was a very productive conversation, but also recognized like, he was pushing me. You were there, you might remember. He was sort of pushing back a little bit, like, am I just trying to recreate, you know, the glory days of what I remember about youth ministry? Mm-hmm. Or are we doing rightful, you know, contextualization?
But you also talked about the context or the contextualization that you experienced in your invocation and benediction, right, with some of these students. So could you maybe speak to that? I found that powerful.
So in the context of IB, when we were meeting around the piano, I did go back to some of the songs that formed me, because they were so meaningful. It's not that I was not insistent on this is somehow superior, even though it might be superior to. Sorry, I had to say. You know, we all.
You said it in the nicest way possible.
The nicest way possible. You know, but there is some music that I wanted to share with the students, and I think they recognize you. You go back to this idea of they want relationship, they want connection, they want authenticity. And we often use those phrases like, oh, we'll be authentic, we're going to be real.
Transparent.
All of those things. Can I put it this way? The nicest way possible. Our students have finely tuned BS meters. And they can detect when we're just blowing smoke, right? They can detect when it's not real. So the songs that I was teaching, they're not hip, cool, whatever. Like they're dated, they're old. But I think it comes from a place of, not only do they trust me, but there's a relational connection and I'm sharing something meaningful.
Yeah. Mr. McFarlane is being authentic in this moment.
And I don't have to say it. I am it.
Yes. Yeah. And there's some respect for that. Mm. Very cool.
So Riley, when you mentioned currency, having another way to say that is to have rapport and to have a deep connection, mm-hmm, with our students. That's the learning process, and we don't want to just have people parachute in and not be able to read the room in the best sense of the word. Not to manipulate the room. We don't want to manufacture anything, but to read the room. You had an experience like that. And I'm saying it in the singular, at least you, I think you spoke once in.
Yeah, I spoke once at our middle school chapel.
Maybe talk, because I know we have an episode in season one.
Yeah, actually, that was it. Now that you mentioned it,
that was the audio of you sharing. But maybe take us behind the scenes on that, or like how that, like the runway into that you had the currency with students.
Yeah, so this is interesting because I had spoken at our school's middle school chapel in previous years as an alum. And the difference between doing it as an alum and coming as a teacher was really, for me, night and day difference. A lot of the difference was also like my strengths had changed. Like I think I had become a much better speaker since then. But then walking into the room and then knowing so many faces, not just like I know of that face, but knowing who that person is, was really powerful, and it really brought to that community and maybe that currency, that deep connection. But it, like, before I sound like, because I don't want to just say like, well, I came and did this and it worked really great in chapel, but before it sounds like I may toot my own horn, I would also like to recognize that my favorite chapels were by two other teachers. We had two chapels this year in our middle school, and they were by two other teachers, and they were by far the most impactful, because here these teachers were sharing their story and making a clear teaching as well. Like a lot of these people are teachers, right? So I think that the clarity that comes with knowing pedagogy and then being able to connect with your students on an academic level, and then also being able to teach from a spiritual level, is huge also. But I thoroughly appreciated that, which made me even more willing to speak in a chapel. And then in approaching that, I spoke on empathy and identity. And we were going into a month where we were going to focus on kindness and empathy. And for me, like it comes down to that deep question of, well, why are we doing this? And for me, I'm like, well, let's root this in Christ. Why don't we just take a big, deep dive into what Jesus Christ has, his view of who we are and how he reflects kindness, and why don't we jump into that? So for me, I came in with students that I wanted to speak to. There were students that wanted to hear me speak and the other teachers. It's not just like, oh, Mr. Duke is great. These other teachers, people wanted to hear what they had to say as well. And then bringing, like, to use actually the word relevancy to what it is that they're learning versus bringing in someone that we may consider relevant was huge.
One of the things that, you know, I'm always cautious about is to speak of efficiency. Like, you know, there's a economic or a business component to that that sort of grates against me, that schooling and teaching and learning, and I'm in the humanities, these things don't require sort of that we, you know, can quantify and all these things. All that to say, is it not highly efficient to already have that currency, already have the rapport, the connection with students, mm-hmm. and it becomes like an extension of your classroom teaching. So you have, you know, your 25 students or whatever, and you're known in the broader school community that is the middle school for you. And this is Mr. Duick sharing from his particular perspective and place and all of that, but you've already got that built up currency and rapport with students. Mm-hmm. That's really efficient in the sense of you can cover more ground, and you yes. don't have to spend all that time building up.
Yes,
if that makes sense. Not that there's anything wrong with bringing somebody in and them having to, you know, the best speakers are able to very quickly warm up to their audience and then read the room and all those sorts of things.
Totally. Well, thank you for sharing just that venture with that chapel leadership team. That's so encouraging. And then also very, I think, very reflective of us to think about, well, what does nostalgia look like for us? And then what is relevant? And then what has currency in our chapels for whatever criteria it is that we're deciding for who gets the mic. So thank you for sharing. If you enjoyed today's episode, this is a summer school episode, which means it's nice, short and sweet stuff for while you're drinking iced tea on the beach, doing some Faith and Learning Pro D. And if you enjoyed it, you can subscribe. I don't think I said that in the last episode, but you can subscribe, be notified of every episode that we drop. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes so more people can figure out about this awesome podcast that we have that's still pretty new. You could also share it with your friends, and you could contact us on Twitter, which is @notmanyofyou. And you could find all of our episodes, show notes, soon to be resources and blogs at notmanyofyou.com. Thanks for listening and have a good summer.